The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
All of us have healing work to do on race and culture topics. We have those questions that seem to be unaskable in today's climate. Now, we have a forum where we can ask experts, listen, and share. Welcome to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. Get ready to engage and add your voice to racial healing in the next hour. Let's start right now. Here's Sharon E. Davis.
Well, welcome again to our show, A Safe Place to Talk About Race. I'm again delighted that you've taken time out of your day to join us. You know, there are enough people already who care enough about race in a way that we can do a lot more about it. So I'm really, really glad that you're joining us. And please spread the word. If you would like to call in, our call-in number is 1-866-472-5788. And email us at info@safeplaceonrace.com. And you know, we're also on Twitter at @asafeplace2talk. Well, we have another very, very important and good show for you today. The title of the show is Being Asian, the Reality, Triumph, and Challenge. And for those of you who saw the promos on that, there is a lot to talk about. Identifying with being Asian and Pacific Islander means many things to many people, but can one name capture the cultural diversity? And are there stereotypes and myths that still dominate today? And it's been described in the United States that Asians are the model minority. Is that true? And who made up that phrase? And much, much more. Well, I'm very happy that Dr. Yvonne Wong Kim will be joining us. And Dr. Kim is the chair and professor of the Social Work Department at California State East Bay. And she's also a licensed clinical social worker. And among other credentials and credits that Dr. Wong Kim has, she is the principal investigator of a project on racial healing among former foster care youth. Welcome to our show, Dr. Kim.
Thank you, Sharon. And it is because of that project we met each other.
Yes. And we've met a couple of times, and it's always been wonderful. You have such a wealth of information, and also you are so kind to talk with me and others and share what you know.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's kind of like our responsibility doing this kind of work to really spread our knowledge and have a good discussion, and I'm glad to be part of the show today. Thank you so much for your invitation.
Well, you're more than welcome. Well, there's a lot of things that we could talk about this subject of being Asian and the reality, triumph, and challenge and challenges. But maybe before we get into a lot of that, what has your focus on this work? How did you get so interested, if that's the word, in this? What's your story?
Oh, that's a good start, Sharon. My story is that I was born and raised in Hong Kong, and back then Hong Kong was, some of you may know, a British colony. And the educational opportunities, not a whole lot, so I was lucky that I have family connections in the United States. So I was able to come to this country with family support, basically just really live with my relatives so you can save some room and board money, and able to start at a junior college in Stockton, California. And after 2 years, I transferred to Berkeley as an undergraduate, and my major was sociology. And during the time as a sociology major, I took some Asian American studies courses, And it's just fascinating to an immigrant that we knew so little about Asian American history in America.
Mm.
And it was mind-boggling that I was so undereducated about my own people living in America.
Mm-hmm.
All the hardship they've gone through, the whole Immigration Act that was very restrictive, very, very racist and abusive to the people, and how some of these practices continues, and how, you know, our group of people gone through so many changes, and they come at different times from different cultures, and how, however, still we being grouped as one big lump group and supposed to just explain all of our experience with just the term Asian.
Well, you know, that brings us to part of the subject for today, Asian and Pacific Islander. And it's
mm-hmm.
an and, right? It's not
yes,
Asian
and.
Or Pacific mm-hmm. Islander. Can you tell our listening audience a little bit about that phrasing?
Okay. Well, the Asian Pacific Islander, short for API, usually used to capture just about anyone and everyone under the umbrella of at least 30-some different languages in just the Asian group alone, and all the Pacific Islanders scattered in Hawaii, in Marshall Islands, South Pacific, and it's really a very broad term. I think in the old days, we used that together because then, one, to make the group a little bit bigger so people would deal with us, you know, that knowing that we have some numbers here. And two, I think it's convenient. So then for a lot of researcher, politician, also policymakers who can just say, oh, this group of people. Although there's really we are a very, very diverse group, probably similar to the Latino group that Asian from Hong Kong, for example, myself, from China, versus those who come from Cambodia or Vietnam. Are actually very different, even if we're all called Asian.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pacific Islander, they have been fighting very hard in recent years to gain their own identity, to say, don't always lump us with the Asian group. We really don't have much in common. We
mm-hmm.
have very different struggles, and we have a very different history. So this term is too broad. For a lot of us who do this kind of research, we always really flinch when people say API. Like, who are you really referring to? Who are we talking about?
Well, you know, we actually had a question from a Mark in Cincinnati, Ohio, that's related to this topic, this particular topic. And
mm-hmm.
his question is, Asians come from many and varied cultures and languages.
Mm-hmm.
What bonds them together?
Mm-hmm.
Is it government statistic kinds of things, or are there mm-hmm. other things that bond together?
I think mostly services, service delivery system. You know, I'm in the social services arena. This is what I do. I started working as a community health worker and did a lot of work with the community. And you see a lot of agencies that serve the Asian Pacific Islander group. Especially at the beginning of our service, you know, that is needing a lot more service during the time that more of the boat people, immigrants who are refugees coming to this U.S., not really by choice, but because,
mm-hmm.
you know, the country got bombed so badly they had to leave. And
mm-hmm.
during the time, there's a lot of services delivered for them as a group. So I think because of that, we come together. Not so much we share everything in common, especially language. I have no idea what the Korean, Japanese, Cambodian, Laotian language is all about. We're very distinctly different. Just the term alone, more describing where you're from, more so than what your culture is like, what language do you speak. So I think we're together, not so much because we share so much in common. Maybe
mm-hmm.
certain values we do, like with
mm-hmm.
many other different groups. But in general, I think it's the service delivery, the community centers, and also government agency that say, you know, this is your category, this is what we're going to do for you. So we would come together as a group to kind of provide those services and maybe sometimes seek the grant money as well as government support for services.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I tell you, Mark from Cincinnati had three questions that
mm-hmm.
he wrote in, and you know, you may know, Doctor, that many people don't call our station when we're on live, and we think that there's a hesitancy because of the topic sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But the questions keep coming in, and Mark from Cincinnati has one that's kind of related to this, and his next question is, how does one Asian group feel about the other Asian groups?
That's a very good question. I don't know. You know, if you look at racism, there's really many different forms.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we within group, we have our issues, too. And I wouldn't say we're one big happy family, because that probably would be too naive to think that everybody just get along and happy with each other. Mm-hmm. There are definitely tensions, and there are definitely issues among groups. And mm-hmm. there are, within the group, there's some hierarchy existing.
Oh, is that right? Can you tell our listening audience a little bit about that?
For example, if you look at historically, for maybe starting in the late 70s, early 80s, the Japanese are very strong economically.
Mm-hmm.
So they are kind of like a dominating society. I mean, financially, they are very dominating at the time. They're very powerful. Mm-hmm. So then the Japanese, you know, in Asia would you know, position themselves more and less like a big brother. They are the trendsetter back then. They're the one who has the money and the resources.
Mm-hmm.
So they would think that they would be more like on top of the Asian group. I think that back then there was some ranking in terms of socioeconomic and power. They ranked number one back then.
Uh-huh,
but then, of course, things change, and now you observe that China has becoming more of a superpower, though they're still classified as developing country. So because of your home country socioeconomic status, it affects people coming to this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how it affects them, like for one thing, for the Japanese immigrants, you don't see that many of them. Because the home is doing fine. They're doing okay at home. They're getting the resources. They have food and all of that. So they didn't really have to migrate as much as people who are like during the, you know, Vietnam War, more of those nations had to leave because all the destructions going on in the home countries. So you see more of those people later coming to the U.S. compared to in the old days. You see more Japanese going to Hawaii. I think Ron Takaki is a very famous Asian-American scholar, and he wrote a lot about the early immigrants, the Japanese group going to Hawaii, what they've gone through.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of issues, diversity, political, socioeconomic, all of that affects the relationship.
Mhm. Mhm. Well, you know, once again, Mark's third question from Cincinnati is in the same subject area a bit, and we have a couple of minutes here.
Mm-hmm.
And he writes, "What are the different challenges and struggles that different Asian American groups face? For instance,
mm-hmm.
what were the main challenges of Vietnamese, and what are the main challenges of Burmese people?"
Mhm. Well, when you look at a minority group, especially the immigrant group, it's very important to look at where they at in terms of how long they've been in this country, what generations we are. So the two groups that he asked about, the Vietnamese and the Burmese people,
mm-hmm.
Myanmar now we call, or they call, that you really need to look at what's the relationship with their own home country for one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the challenges has a lot to do with your relationship with your home country because you come as an immigrant, if we're talking about the immigrant group.
Yeah.
The immigration status is a very big factor for mm-hmm. those, for us, for the immigrant groups. If you look at people who are born and raised in this country, they have a very different kind of challenge. So for what he's asking is really more about those who's been more acculturated, who has been living in this country for a long time, what they're facing, what they're confronting versus those newer groups who's been here not as long or maybe just first generation or 1.5, we call it,
mm-hmm.
Meaning the young kids coming, you know, when they're like maybe 6, 7, or 8, they're not born here, but they're very young when they come. Those groups face very different challenges. If you look at the statistics.
You've mentioned 1.5, and we're about ready to go to break, and I'd like to know a little bit more about it. I don't think that I've heard that that before. So,
really?
So we'll be right back with Dr. Yvonne Wong Kim.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Many people are seeking to make a difference in the world, but few actually have the tools to do so. Every week, host Mary Beth Lodge and her guests will have you thinking forward and will give you the tips to keep your life, goals, priorities, and choices on track. The result is an easier, happier, and more inspired life. The name of the program is What Matters. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. What really matters is the positive changes that you'll bring to your life and the world just by listening. What does the new health care law mean to you? Why is the country facing a deepening deficit? Can it be reversed? If education is important to fund, shouldn't we insist on seeing results? Do we have a workable energy policy? Who's calling the shots? Tune in to In the Public Interest with host Mike Hudson. We'll cover public policy, everything from taxes and spending to health care and other threatened entitlements. If it's in the public interest, it's in your interest to know. In the Public Interest can be heard live every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Come back to your senses. Imagine a radio show that will help you recover your common sense. Host Leah Brenda Smith is a health and wellness specialist who will explain techniques designed to help you recover from the stress of your life. It's all about how you respond to your thoughts. A little bit of self-awareness can go a long way in helping you to relax and enjoy your life. Tune in to Come Back to Your Senses Radio, live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com. You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to our show. The show title is Being Asian, the Reality, Triumph, and Challenge. And I'm just delighted to have Dr. Yvonne Wong Kim, who is the chair and professor of social work department at California State East Bay. And she has already told us so much that all of us need to know more about. We left off before break with a reference to 1.5. Dr. Wong Kim, what is 1.5 again?
It's really about people who come when they are a child. So this 1.5 generation is that you're not first generation, but you're not really second generation. You're not born here. So we have the new term called 1.5 that really describe people who come here young and get most of their education in the U.S., but really not quite born here to be able to benefit from some of the opportunities. Like, for example, if you're 1.5, regardless of how good you are, you won't be able to run for president. That's one thing about this group. Yeah. So the challenge of 1.5 is that sometimes they don't really identify with their home country anymore, but still have parents who are very, very much tied to the old culture, and yet they somewhat have an implication of being torn between two cultures sometimes. Mm.
Dr. Wong Kim, this leads us into another question that's related to that from a Rose in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And her question is, how long have you been in the United States, and does she feel that she is different or sees herself as an American totally? Does she feel that she is totally integrated into this culture now? If so, how long does it take for her to feel that way? This is a very personal question.
Well, it's a really brilliant question, actually, because I ask myself that question from time to time. I think it takes a very long time to be able to integrate into this culture.
Mm-hmm.
Acculturation is not a simple process, and we don't like the term assimilation. That means you give up what you have.
Yeah.
At this point, I was saying I am more American than Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
When I first come to this country, I think as a protective factor, I would keep telling myself I'm Chinese, so it doesn't bother me, or then it's okay for some of the racism that I had to endure.
Mm-hmm.
As a student in Stockton back then, I remember one night I was riding my bicycle home and two guys in a pickup truck threw a beer bottle at me and basically said to me, "Refugee, go home."
Mm-hmm.
And that was the time when there was a lot of Cambodian and Vietnamese refugees moving into that area because the government moved them there, basically, not that by choice. And at the time, I was thinking to myself, but that's okay. I am really Chinese. I come here for my education. I got educated. I can go home. That's how I kind of protect myself from feeling that kind of, you know, extreme racism, and I could get really hurt, you know, by this beer bottle threw at me and end up at the hospital, could even die, you know, if I wasn't lucky that day.
Oh, my gosh.
But in later life, I realized you can only escape so much to deal with the reality that this is life in here, and I've been here for 30 years. I'm married. I have children here. I marry someone who's 1.5. He's a legal attorney, very active in the Asian community, and he's Korean. I realized that at some point you just have to accept the fact that you chose this as your home. You have to learn. You have to be active, and you have to really help your people and other people, too, to make this a better society.
Well, you know, along these lines, a JR from Battle Creek, Michigan, has a question that seems like it fits very well with what you just described.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, compared to other minorities like African Americans and Latino Hispanics, Asians seem rather quiet when it comes to issues related to racism, discrimination, and marginalization.
Mm-hmm.
Is this by design by the people, or is media ignoring Asian community issues? Wow, what do you think?
Wow. You have brilliant questions and brilliant listeners. That's a really great question, because the fact is that there's many different factors why we're quiet. Yeah, and I admit that we're more quiet than other groups, and we do benefit from other groups being very, you know, aggressive in pursuing the opportunity and equality and all the protection in this country.
Mm.
I think for one thing, a lot of people who come here had very bad experience with the government. They persecuted, and a lot of bad things happened. And the Chinese immigrant I work with in my community days is that they're very afraid of letting people know what had happened because they don't trust the government.
Uh-huh.
And they're afraid that something would get back to them if they say something. So many of them are quiet because of that fear. I mean, you're in a new country, you don't know how they're going to deal with you, you say something wrong, they might kick you out.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other hand, the culture itself kind of really, most Asian culture, maybe not all of us, but one value we do share is that we value getting along. You know, that's what I was taught when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
You don't make a whole lot of noise, you need to get along. And that has a lot to do with space also. It's not just political, it's space. If you've been to Asian country, you know the minute you step out of your apartment, there's like tons of people everywhere you turn.
Uh-huh.
You need to learn to get along. You know, if you're not happy, you start shooting people. There will be too many shootings going on every day because there's so many people in your face. So you learn to get along, and you learn to accept the fact that things are going to happen that you're not going to like, and just deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So the culture is one thing, the mistrust is another thing, and also I would also say that to some extent that our media also hasn't been portraying a whole lot about Asian.
Uh-huh.
And what we have concern about that doesn't usually get a whole lot of attention.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, along these lines also, there's another question from JR in Battle Creek. It takes us in a slightly different direction, mm-hmm. but it's, you know, are there hidden pressures within the Asian community to live up to stereotypes? Mm-hmm. And some of these stereotypes we might have to take a look at after break, but let's just see how far we can get. Mm-hmm. The rest of his question has to do with stereotypes of being the model minority. And is this an organized effort to help perpetuate that image within the Asian community? What do you think?
Well, it's interesting because if you look at our community, there's two groups of people. There may be one group that would think that, oh, that's a good thing. I'm a model minority. I can get promoted. I'm accepted by the society. I can move ahead. And we think that this is a great idea. But then on the other hand, for those of us who does service delivery, especially to work with our people, we see a lot of problems with this identity. Mm. Because just the newest report come out, Pell report, that talks about how great the Asians are doing and they are such model minority. The flip side of that is there's a lot of groups. Those groups that hasn't been able to catch up, has been here not too long, and has not have a whole lot of opportunity, and has a whole lot of problem with substance abuse, with mental health problem, health issues, you know, lower education, and many of them do not speak or read English. All of those problems then can be swept away, because you guys are fine.
Oh.
You are doing good. Yeah, we don't have to worry about you. Think about if you have four kids in the family and one of them say, oh, you're doing good, fine, now I can just cut you out and I don't have to worry. All my resources can then go to the other groups.
Well, you know, you brought up a very interesting and complex dynamic here,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
about that. So on the one hand, it seems that, you know, to be associated with the model minority is an advantage at times, and that it's a disadvantage at times, depending on maybe what cultural group within Asian and Pacific Islander community one comes from, or economic status within any group.
Exactly. And if you look at the statistics, our community really is kind of having something called binomial distribution, meaning it's really just two extreme distribution. One group is doing really well socioeconomically, but there's
mm-hmm.
another group that's doing very poorly.
Mm-hmm.
So socioeconomically.
Well, who made up this term anyway? Does anybody know the model minority? Who made that up?
You know, I have some information that is from a researcher, actually in my discipline. His name is Harry. I forgot his last name now. I think it's one of the Asian researcher in the 70s or maybe even in the 80s that make up the model minority term and say, oh, this is how they treat us, and then think that. But then the problem is the second half didn't get noticed, meaning this is what they call us, so they don't have to take care of us. But only the first part tick off, you know, and they're calling us model minority without saying, wait, but that's not the intention. The intention was to say, don't call us model minority and get us, you know, nothing, or pit us against another group.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of the literature showing that some of the African-American group is very upset with this title.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, you guys think you're so much better than us. You know, you're doing so well that we're not, like. And then sometimes I hear people say things like, well, you know, you look at those groups, they don't work hard enough. If they like the Asian group, we're going to be okay. Everybody will be good if everybody's like the Asian group.
Yeah.
So then you're pitting one group against the other, really, in the U.S.
Well, this sounds familiar. This sounds very familiar, this kind of divide and pitting one group against another group. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, thank you for explaining that. And it's also part of JR's question was, are there hidden pressures within the Asian community and Pacific Islander community to live up to these stereotypes? What do you think?
Yeah, I think for daily people, everyday life type people, there are this kind of pressure to the point that people feel like, oh, you failed. How terrible are you? You look at your neighbors, they're doing fine. How come you're not doing well? And that's why it created a lot more serious problems later, meaning people don't seek help. People don't, you know, talk about the problems. And a lot of kids felt like they can't communicate with the family. The expectations high, the pressure's high. and a lot of Asian kids, you know, just basically doing what they're supposed to, but not really seeking what opportunities available in the U.S., meaning you have to study engineering because your parents told you to do so, even though your passion is in music.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah, the parents say, oh, yeah, you're not going to do this. And you've seen some of the shows, some of the stories about these kind of things still happen in our community. But so I think inadvertently it really affects a lot of people in the daily lives in a sense that not allowing them to make some choices, to bear this burden of having to do certain things. And then you had the Tiger Mom, the whole Tiger Mom
thing that came out,
remember?
Oh, yeah.
And somehow it's coined, it's the Asian thing. These Asian moms who force the kids to do whatever, and then they excel. It's like, really, does it really come down to that, something that simple? Maybe it's more complex than that. That has a whole lot to do with what the kids like and what's opportunities available. I mean, having someone who have the resources to say, okay, I'm going to force you to play piano for an hour versus someone who worked 12 hours at a restaurant, who have no money to pay for piano lesson, who have no money or time to be able to be with the kids because they have to go to work as a dishwasher all day long. I mean, what kind of pressure it has on those people?
Well, I'm sure that there's more to talk about that, and we're going to go to break, and we'll be right back to talk more with Dr. Yvonne Wong Kim.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Each week, Jimmy Gould brings you the stories and the people that you want to hear about. Tune in to A Current Life to hear about the journey to success, how our guests became the people they are today, and the highs and lows they experienced along the way. Each hour will leave you inspired and entertained as Jimmy gets up close and personal with every week's guest and shares ideas you can identify with and apply to your own life. A Current Life with Jimmy Gould airs Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Listen for Trust Across America every week on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in as host Jordan Kimmel is joined by national experts in the fields of accounting, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability, as well as companies that are applying strategies that are enabling them to be recognized as doing the right thing by the American Trust Awards. Your host, Jordan Kimmel, is himself a trusted professional with years of experience in applying strategies and consulting with today's leading firms. Trust Across America is heard Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back. We're here with Dr. Wong Kim, who is the chair and professor of social work department at California State East Bay. And Yvonne, you have shared so much information that's useful and important. We have so much more to cover.
It's my pleasure, Sharon. It's really great talking to you and your audience.
Well, I tell you, maybe one of the other areas that we could delve into a bit has to do with this paradise that's referred to a lot as Hawaii or the Hawaiian Islands. And I'm not sure that our listening audience knows a little bit about the history of how Hawaii became part of the United States. Could you share a little bit about what really happened? Was it colonized? Did we take it? Or were they willing partners in joining us?
Well, I think if you do a survey in Hawaii, you get very diverse responses. And, of course, a lot of people would enjoy what they're enjoying right now. But the Hawaiian group, some of the people are still very upset that this is colonization. They didn't have a say when it became the state of U.S. And also some of the culture has been lost. The language is not preserved. Mm-hmm. And what's even more important now is that we have U.S. federal government basically supposed to do something for the other Pacific Islanders. And Hawaii is bearing the major cost of doing some of these work, which is about the Pacific Island. Like, if, for example, we're talking about Micronesian, Marshall Islands, we have this compact that we're supposed to provide education and healthcare services to the folks in those islands because we use them for nuclear testing.
Wait, Yvonne. Let's go over that again just
okay.
a little bit. So the Hawaiian Islands were basically colonized, from what I've read anyway, and the queen was toppled from being the queen of Hawaii, and it became magically part of the United States, and now Hawaii is kind of a hub for other islands in the Pacific Islanders who may have been impacted by nuclear bomb testing and all of that. Do I have that right?
Yeah, you have it totally right. See, what happened is Hawaii, when I was living in Hawaii, we're all often very upset that we're being treated as a state, but sometimes we're not. If you purchase stuff, it would, like, you have to, a lot of things that say, oh, it only applies to continental U.S. So if you're Hawaii, we have to charge you this, we have to, you know, charge you shipping, blah, blah. So it's already kind of, we're treated slightly different, I would say. We're not totally equal. And the distance itself is far. Even though it's very, it's a beautiful place and it's very comfortable and the weather's great, the reality is there's a lot of homeless problems in Hawaii.
Really?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Major problem with homelessness. And the Hawaiian people, just imagine, you're living in a house and all of a sudden I tell you, Sharon, your house mine. You got to move out. This is not your house. And you say, okay, if you want to share my house, I'll share it with you. I'll move out temporarily, and then I will come back. No. You're not coming back. This is my house now.
Really?
But some of the people feel that way, that they got their land, they got their, you know, culture just got taken away. And if you also look at Hawaii, I mean, the beautiful side is, oh, we can always go there. We can blow some money on a nice vacation and all of that. But imagine working and living in Hawaii. The housing's terribly expensive. And then your salary's really low. Mm-hmm. People have to work two jobs in order to live there. And the Hawaiian people, and you look at the statistic, most of the people in jail are Hawaiians. And then you look at the Samoans also, mainly in the criminal justice system, foster care, and all of that. So what's going on? What went wrong that even in such a paradise, you still have all these problems that is really not serving the people? Mm-hmm. The process, like you say, was not smooth, what had happened, and there's still a whole lot of resentment. We don't want to deal with it because we always think of Hawaii as a happy place, that everybody get along, that we go and have a good vacation. But underneath all that, you still have a whole lot of social problems not dealt with, you know, and the resources are limited. With such limited resources, you still have to take care of another group of people that the U.S. government's supposed to take care of. But yet, it ended up being a Hawaii problem, that they tax the system, that, you know, the service delivery, all of that. And they're not equipped to take care of more people when they themselves are really kind of, for a lot of people who are low income, who are homeless, they're only getting by. And now you have the Pacific Islanders, you're also responsible. And I'm not the expert in this area because I'm not a Pacific Islander and I haven't done a whole lot of research in the area, but I have a lot of people I know that live and work in Hawaii, and they're very concerned about how the mainstream U.S. just don't even know about this whole Pacific Island issue, that we are supposed to deliver the services, the federal government is not taking full responsibility.
Well, Yvonne, that's one of the reasons why we do this show. There's so much holes in information, gaps. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that I'm, and hopefully I'm just the average person out there, I don't remember seeing anything like this in the news media.
Wow.
I have not.
Oh, I have a good friend. His name is Dr. Palafox, and he does a lot of research in this area, and the lecture he gives is just like amazing. It's like we just didn't know the extent of destruction we created in the Pacific Islands, and a lot of people come down with cancer. And think about the island used for nuclear testing. You cannot grow any more fruit, vegetables. And the fish that you usually eat, you fish, you know, that's how you sustain your life, is not edible. So, you know, people laugh when they go to Hawaii and see spam being served on the menu. Well, you go to McDonald's and you can order spam and eggs in the morning. You know that, Sharon? That must be the only McDonald's that serves spam. And the reason why spam is so big in Hawaii, because when you cannot eat certain food, or when the war's going on and there's nothing flying in, and your land is being destroyed, you cannot grow any more food, and then, you know, the fishing is not available anymore, and a lot of, you know, even now a lot of golf courses being built rather than, you know, farmland. What do? You eat the things that you can put in the shelf for a very long time. That won't spoil. And also during the Second World War, that's what the government gave to people, when we don't know during the war that if any supply would get to Hawaii. People giving these comfort sacks that, you know, inside the sack, there's this, all these canned food. So people can sustain their life by canned food. And this culture continues.
Well, you know, Yvonne, I hope that our listening audience will take this to heart. And when we think of how things really occur around the world, this is really an old story. We've had that same story inside the continental, you know, United States, of various groups being marginalized, or and it takes a lot to come back from that being marginalized. So I'm very happy that we're talking about this sad subject so that more people will know about it.
I know.
Unbelievable. Well, we have a few more minutes in this segment, and maybe we have a chance to begin to start more knowledge about the Asian American Civil Rights Movement and Vincent Chin.
Yes.
Can you tell our listening audience just a little bit about who is Vincent Chin, and we can only hope that they really know.
I know. Vincent Chin is a Chinese American who actually was bitten to death by white folks who worked in the in Detroit in car industry. I think when he died, he was mistaken as Japanese. And he was bitten to death because the father and the son lost a job. Because these plants, these car making plants, are moving to Japan, and that's why they're angry after they had a few drinks and they got upset, so they bitten him to death with a baseball bat. I think that was the most openly racist incident that really fire up our community to say, hey, you know, we can't be quiet anymore. We got to do something about this. So that is one major teaching, major incident that I learned when I was doing my Asian American studies, that we talk about Vincent Chin and say we need to prevent these kind of things from happening in our community. And to be really seriously looking at us being a diverse group, even if he's Japanese, does he deserve to die? I mean, what does he have to do with, you know, you losing your job? See, that's why the immigrants often use as a scapegoat.
Right.
When the time is good, you know, it's okay. We don't want these jobs, so you can import these people and they can do these dirty jobs or tough jobs that we don't want. And then when the time is bad, and then they point at you and say, oh, you took all our jobs away. I mean, the same thing with a lot of folks who are now in California picking fruit.
Right.
Folks from Mexico, you know, like, we need them. That's why our produce is cheap. And then they have horrible work environment, you know, documentary showing one after another, child labor and all kinds of bad stuff. And yet we look at them as if, oh, when the time's bad, we tighten up this and you can't come here to get these jobs. I mean, frankly, can we really do this job without them? Fruit picking is not easy. You know,
we
go under the sun for an hour, we're going to faint. So we use these people when we need to. Like our community, same thing. We're being used, you know, when we were here building the railroad, there are a lot of Chinese being sent to the tunnels to start off the bombs. And before people can get out, they would just already start the bomb. You know, a lot of people die from doing that.
Well, this is a very old story, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Because it seems to happen, and why we do this show.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, our listening audience and those of us who are working on this so hard want to stop this cycle of various groups being victimized. We'll be right back from break.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ever wondered what private investigators really do and how they go about solving cases? Each week, PIs Declassified gives a glimpse into this little-known world. Join your host, Francie Kaler, a noted private investigator, in conversations with detectives and experts in the field. False confessions, forensic evidence, finding missing persons, exposing fraud, exonerating the innocent. All areas that Francie and her guests will cover. And have they got stories to tell? Tune in and call in to the live show Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
Step up to the microphone. View the finalists right now on VoiceAmericaKids.tv. America's next great star is waiting to be discovered. Step Up to the Microphone is an exclusive presentation for VoiceAmerica.tv, where you can see and hear America's next top child star. The program is hosted by Voice America's own Cassie Frazier, and new episodes will be available every week exclusively at VoiceAmericaKids.tv. You can say you saw them at the beginning of their superstar career. Tune in to VoiceAmericaKids.tv.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back. We're with Dr. Yvonne Wong Kim, who has been very generous in sharing her knowledge with us. And we left off talking about the Asian American Civil Rights Movement and Vincent Chin, and who is he? And I hope that our listening audience has a better perspective about that. But it doesn't just stop with Vincent Chin. Dr. Wong Kim, have there been recent incidences of Asian Americans or Pacific Islanders that our listening audience needs to be reminded about?
Oh, yeah. There's a really sad case of Private Danny Chan.
Mm-hmm.
I think in our community, a lot of people heard of him. He's a private, and he's in the army. He shot himself in a guard tower when he was in Afghanistan, and mainly because he had endured a whole lot of mistreatment, hazing, and basically ritualistic abuse. And he's all over the news. If you Google Danny Chan, C-H-E-N, you can read more about what he had gone through. But his parents are really trying very hard to bring all of that out to, you know, seek justice of what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And before he died, he talked about how the army was not friendly to people who are from Asian descent.
Mm-hmm.
There's a mistrust going on, and people been very, you know, abusive to him, mm-hmm. basically because of the way he looks. And I think this morning in NPR, there's also an incident of a Sikh community that was being shot. And that's definitely hate crime, and that definitely because they look different than the rest of the society over there, you know. It's just very sad and depressing. That is why it's so important to talk about this
for all of us.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, one of the other questions that came up is really more on the upswing a bit. Let's see what Bob from Detroit offers. He's a longtime listener and has an interest in a wide variety of topics. And his question is for Dr. Wong Kim: the Asian American community has contributed much to our society. However, many remain distant. What can be done to bring a closer relationship between Asian Americans and other minorities in the country?
That's a good question. The reality is all politics are local. You know, when we say, oh, bringing the group together, how do you bring them together? It's like, what do we do then to bring our friends together? Mm-hmm. Have we reached out to these groups? What have we done, you know, to really include those who may not be able to feel very comfortable participating?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think our group, of course, bears some responsibility that we need to be more active, and there are more and more organizations that is pushing for more political activism, and we're training the younger generation that you can't just be, living with this model minority title and not thinking about how to bring people together and how to learn from each other. You know, because, you know, we are who we are because we're able to benefit from the civil rights movement. If it weren't for Dr. King, mm-hmm. we are people of color also. Mm-hmm. We won't be able to have all these opportunities that we have been enjoying right now.
Well, you know, Dr. Wong Kim, I'm not sure that many of our listeners have heard that said quite that way before.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like just a healing balm of recognition.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
That we all are in this together. We
mm-hmm.
really are.
Yeah. Our community need to take more responsibility of educating the newcomers and people who are not born and raised, educated in this country about the whole civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding of my people who would think that, oh, you know, how come those people don't do this and that? And they haven't, they come and everything is hunky-dory, maybe I would say, and think that, oh, you always can walk into a restaurant. You can always just go and lodge at any hotel. It wasn't like that just, 50 years ago.
Right, right, right. Well, we have a caller, Leah mm-hmm. from Royal Oaks. Mm-hmm. Let's take a look and hear what Leah's question is. Welcome to the show, Leah.
Good afternoon, Dr. Yvonne and Sharon. This is such a great show.
Oh, thank you.
I really don't have a question. I have a comment. Mm-hmm. When you began to talk about Vincent Chin, mm-hmm. you know, I've grown up in Detroit area, mm-hmm. and when this event happened, I was in high school, and I remember being impacted so heavily by just the hate that came because of that. And my comment is that I'm so grateful that you're doing this show, if for no other reason but to bring up names like the Vincent Chins and mm-hmm. the things that the people that this has happened to, so that we don't forget, mm-hmm. so that we can move forward. I just had such an emotional response to that because it just took me back. And I just wanted to say thank you for keeping the stories and the memories alive.
Yeah, thank you so much for making that comment, because it is still very much alive and it's still affecting us. And we need to look forward, but also knowing what had we endured, we can learn and really understand the psychology and to think about how we can really prevent these more tragedy like these from happening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Leah from Royal Oaks.
Thank you.
Well, Yvonne, I'm so glad that we heard from Leah and others as well who have written in questions, because it helps all of us know that we're members of the same human family.
Exactly.
And, what hurts one of us will eventually, if we don't understand at first, hurt all of us.
But, you know, to a certain extent, too, I think your caller and also the people who write to us and mm-hmm. email about these questions are the people who are passionate about this topic and need to
yes.
get to those people who are not listening to the program, who didn't talk about these kind of issues,
mm-hmm.
and who chose to turn away when the subject rises. So I think we need to take more of an active approach to preach to those who haven't heard us, you know,
mm-hmm.
that who really are not comfortable still about some of these issues, to not be afraid of starting a conversation.
Well, you know, that's why we named the show A Safe Place, to talk about race, and we expect many, many more people than already are listening to it, and to have an opportunity to learn and be at one with each other. And, you know, we've always said as part of the show that we learned our way into this mess of racism, and we as human beings have the capacity and the ability to learn our way out, and we will. We will.
Exactly. And well, I have good faith in America. This is a good country. And we have good people. People who really would go out of the way to make sure everybody's doing well.
Right.
Just me. You know, everybody. So I think with this kind of critical mass, things would only get better.
Yeah, and it is. Maybe not fast enough. For all of us, but you know, we see signs of that. You know, the very idea that you and others are working very hard and are willing to share what you know on this show.
Yeah.
Well, maybe in the 1 minute that we have left, Dr. Wong Kim, is there anything that you would like our listening audience to know in particular about Asian Americans and Asians and Pacific Islanders?
Well, I wanted to say that our group is still relatively quiet. That is true. And we are becoming more and more active. Mm-hmm. And we will need help from other groups, too, who have a lot of experience. Mm-hmm. And I really seen a whole lot that we learned from the African-American as well as the Latino group. And if you look at the Olympics, I think since we're like all wrapped up with Olympic right now, I mean, how many countries are like ours that have all these people representing different groups and different strains?
That is just wonderful.
Different things, good at different things, you know.
That is just wonderful. You know, I know that our conversation isn't over, but our time has run out. Dr. Wong Kim, thank you so much for joining us and sharing all of your brilliant information. Thank you.
You're welcome, Sharon. This is my pleasure.
Thank you again for listening today. Please join host Sharon E. Davis for another edition of A Safe Place to Talk About Race next Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll talk then.